And good morning, everybody. You're listening to the Mighty 690 KGGF here on this Tuesday morning. We hope you are doing well. Currently outside, it is 28 degrees, and it will be slightly cooler than yesterday. And now joining us on the phone, as he is with us this time every month, we are talking to the Attorney General of Kansas. We're talking to Derek Schmidt. And Mr. Schmidt, good morning. How are you doing today, sir?
Good morning, Kyle. I'm doing great. And you?
I am doing pretty good. Can't complain too much about the weather right now. It's been pretty nice for this time of year. Several things on the docket that have been going on. And one of the things that we're talking about for this month, this is human traffic awareness. We had the day of a few days ago, but this is kind of going on for the month as well, too, correct?
Yeah, every January is marked National Human Trafficking Awareness Month, and then there's a specific day in there that's the Awareness Day. And so we, of course, work on with partners across the board, recognizing that from the Attorney General's office. It's an issue we've been very engaged on for the past 10 years now. Human trafficking, you know, a lot of people conjure up this notion of people being smuggled in the backs of trucks across an international boundary, but that's really not what we're talking about. That's a tiny, tiny subset of trafficking that's really referred to as human smuggling. Most trafficking, the buying and selling of human beings for profit, it's domestic, and a large percentage of it is child trafficking. It's taking kids who are broken and vulnerable, often, certainly not always, but often foster kids who move from home to home, wind up in an unstable circumstance, homeless kids who wind up on the street and don't have any sort of traditional social support network, and traffickers offer them support and stability. And in exchange for that, traffickers wind up selling their labor or their bodies. And sadly, it happens in communities large and small all over the country, including in Kansas. We report a number every year of trafficking victims who are served by various social service agencies in Kansas, from domestic violence shelters to child advocacy centers. And in this past year, those agencies reported just over 500 cases involving trafficking victims. So it's here and it's real, and we do our best during Human Trafficking Awareness Month to talk about it and to share the reality of it, that it's a function of broken lives here domestically far, far more than it is this sort of stereotype of smugglers in box trucks coming across the border at night.
Yes, and again, hopefully, obviously, definitely trying to lower that of what is going on. Also, another thing I'd like to talk about, of course, the emergency powers legislation. That is something that has definitely come up since the start of the legislative session last week. Just kind of your thoughts on that as of right now.
Well, we've talked about that before on these interviews, Kyle, and you know, the bottom line is that we are in an unprecedented emergency still with COVID. It's lasted nearly a year now. The use of emergency powers, which really are designed to bypass the ordinary checks and balances by which we make difficult public decisions together in a broad and diverse state. And our Emergency Powers Act was not designed for this type of emergency. It was designed for a short-term, geographically limited in scope in terms of the response type of emergency. It's where NATO hits a town, there's a flood like we had in southeast Kansas just over a decade ago. That sort of thing. It's not designed for this sort of long-term, statewide, suspend the rules and checks and balances, allow ruling by decree. This is just not what it was designed for. So I'm certainly not alone in believing that. People, I think, across the spectrum agree on that point. The issue is what's to be done about it. And the legislature, to their credit, I think, is taking this issue very seriously. It looks like what they're going to do is a two-step approach. First, they've already started trying to reach agreement to extend the current state of play, the current authorities, through probably the end of March. Could be longer. There's a little disagreement between the House and Senate on that, because they certainly don't want to disrupt the current COVID response. They want it to continue uninterrupted. But at the same time, they don't want to write a blank check to just continue living under this emergency regime indefinitely. And then the second step, they intend to return and have a debate on some of the difficult issues that we know exist here, not the least of which is, because of the design of our emergency powers law, the checks and balances built into it don't function, particularly when the legislature is out of session through most of the year. So I think they have their work cut out for them. I think there are serious minds of different sort of philosophical points of view that are focused on this. We're trying to help them come to some type of a consensus, and I'm pretty optimistic they're going to get there.
And you were speaking of COVID, and there's been relief given by the federal government. Unfortunately, there are scammers that like to try to jump in and get that money from people who deserve it. So you're asking people to be watchful for COVID relief scammers.
Yeah. Certainly that's true in general, and then in particular right now. Of course, Congress, right at the end of the year, passed this second COVID relief bill that includes a second round of direct payment checks. Most folks are going to wind up like they did late last spring, early summer. They're going to wind up with either a physical check in their mailbox from the federal government or a direct deposit into their bank account. And what that means, because it's been in the headlines so much, is that the bad guys know that money is coming, and they've rolled out the usual panoply of scams that are built on that type of headline. You know, for example, we've already seen where people start to get calls or other solicitations saying, have you gotten your COVID check yet? If not, we can help you get it more quickly by our services. Well, of course, none of that's true. Federal government's not calling. It's Brooke who's calling. You don't have to pay to get your money faster, and in any event, you won't get it faster if you pay. It's purely a scam. So we've just been trying to remind people that bad guys are still out there. They're doing the same thing now they did last summer, and their goal is to get your money. Be alert. Don't let them do it. And for more tips, particulars, folks are welcome to go to our consumer website at www.inyourcornerkansas.com. .org, and they'll find quite a bit more information there about this.
Just a few more things to discuss with you here today, sir. One thing that you did about a week and a half ago, the Kansas Supreme Court upheld the workers' compensation law, which made it the prerogatives of the state to adopt newer evaluation guidelines.
Right. So workers' compensation, of course, a very important public policy. And the basic theory, the high-level theory of work comp is the state's going to have a system by which workers who are injured on the job get compensated by their employers through the work comp system. And there's a formula that calculates how much compensation is due for any given injury. And in exchange for that, workers generally aren't allowed to go down to the courthouse and file injury suits against employers. That's kind of the big bargain for workers' comp. The issue is that that formula, the devil's in the details. And how do you calculate how much a torn rotator cuff is, quote-unquote, worth, how much the compensation has to be? Generally speaking, that's determined in individual courtrooms as work comp claims may be disputed. But there are guides. And the guides that typically are used in Kansas are put out by the American Medical Association. And the AMA updates those guides every so often. Kansas had relied upon the fourth edition, which was published of those guides, published back in the 90s. And the legislature just a few years ago decided they wanted to update that and rely on a newer sixth edition of the AMA guides. And they did that by amending the law, the workers' comp law. Some folks who were displeased with that outcome, because, of course, new guides have different details, and for some injuries you get more compensation, for some injuries you get less compensation than you would have before, and some of the folks displeased on the less side, understandably, filed a lawsuit and challenged the validity of that new amendment to the workers' comp law, and basically their argument was, I have a right to trial by jury. The government's taken that right away in this case and substituted this work comp payment, but the work comp payment that they're giving me is not sufficient to substitute for my right to trial by jury. So that's the down-in-the-weeds issue. We've been litigating that because our job is to defend the state law as it was passed by the legislature. We've been litigating that, defending the law now for a period of years, and Just recently, the Kansas Supreme Court upheld the authority of the legislature to do what it's done, to make the judgment call on whether to use the older or the newer guides as sort of the touchstone for these things. So we did our job, and the legislature's judgment was vindicated in the sense the court said they have the authority to do it. And folks who are happy are happy, and those who are unhappy, their recourse is now to go back to the legislature and make their case.
All right. So and that's has to do with the workers' compensation laws. And one of the last things I did want to talk with you about, sir, of course, since the last time we've talked, of course, we had the big thing that happened up at the U.S. Capitol. Just your thoughts on that. And that was one of the things when I was watching it, I just could not believe what I was seeing. I just wanted to know your thoughts on that.
Well, it's a shameful display of criminal conduct by a bunch of folks who thought they were above the law. I certainly never thought I'd see that in my lifetime. I also never thought I would see, you know, rioters laying siege to a federal courthouse in Portland over an extended period of weeks in the summer, or much of the other rioting and looting that we've seen that may not have damaged public or federal property, but that destroyed hundreds of lives by destroying small businesses in riot areas around the country. So we're living in a terribly uncertain time. I think right now there's, an effort to sort of figure out what all this means. And some of those efforts are, I think, thoughtful and sincere. And unsurprisingly, some of those are partisan and political, which is very disappointing. My hope is that we'll get through the transition to the new presidential administration tomorrow. The president-elect Biden, when he becomes President Biden, will set a tone, as he's promised to, that will really, as he says, bring the country together, and that folks will allow things to calm down a bit going forward. I do worry some, sort of on the other hand, that throwing the baby out with the bathwater is a possibility here, just because I believe strongly, and many others do as well, that violence is unacceptable, and the way that you express disagreement with the direction of your government is not to take to the streets or to invade its buildings or to hurt people. That doesn't mean that somehow there's magically going to be agreement among Americans on what the proper role for its government is. And we are about to take a very sharp turn in this country from kind of having steered hard to the right to now steering hard to the left. And that's not a function of the personalities of Donald Trump or the personality of Joe Biden. It's a function of the reality that the presidency is far, far bigger than any one person, and that the people Trump surrounded himself with did, I think, on the whole, a good job of moving the country in a more conservative, small government direction, except for the shameful failure on expenditures, which is just blows my mind, the amount of money the government spent in the last several years. But deregulation, more instinctively conservative, originalist judges, I think those are good things. And I think we're going to see movement in the opposite direction in the Biden administration on those sorts of things. So I hope the country can sort of get its act together here, and that we can have sincere political debates where people have strongly held opinions, but where we settle our differences in court or in legislative forums, or sometimes in coffee shops all around the country, but certainly not in the streets. And we do it with words, we do it with ideas, and we don't do it with violence.
I definitely agree with you on that one, sir. And hopefully we can have more civil discourse like that you've been saying, because, again, that's actually the best way to do, is to actually talk with each other hear both sides' ideas, and then come to basically kind of meet in the middle. That's always the best way to work with that. And that's how my parents always taught me to deal with things like that. Well, sir, I appreciate you coming on today. It's always a pleasure to have you on here every month. And we will talk to you again next month.
Sounds great. Thank you very much, pal. Take care.
All right. Thanks a lot. That is the the Attorney General of the state of Kansas, Derek Schmidt, joining us this morning here on the Mighty 690 KGGF. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back on the other side, we'll have some news at the top of the hour. And then joining us in studio will be Lisa Wilson from the Independence Chamber of Commerce and Sergeant Jeremy Hunsucker from the Montgomery County Sheriff's Office. We're going to take a quick break. You're listening to the Mighty 690 KGGF here on this Tuesday morning.